IFPRI Policy Seminar, Transforming Agriculture in Africa, The Insider's Perspective, held on September 26, 2013, in Washington, D.C. Speaker, Shengen Fan, Director General of IFPRI.
Let me call on our fourth speaker and our final speaker, Shengen Fan, who is the Director General of IFPRI and needs no introduction. Shengen, we look forward to you telling us more about what we can learn from the experiences of China, India, and Brazil. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Raju. Let me also join Raju to welcome you here, particularly our speakers. Jonathan, we have worked together for a long time. Khalid, I'm so I'm so glad that you give us such a powerful presentation here on the success and some challenges of ATA. As you know, IFPRI has been working with you. Initially, we were very reluctant to take over. So we set up a right boundary where IFPRI can do good research to support you. So we are mutually independent, providing the best support to you. We are still doing that. So I really appreciate Shahid, Maximo, and many others, IFPRI's dedication to supporting you. Then Yaya, probably you don't know, the Yaya in my dialect means uncle. So Jonathan, you got to improve your dialect, not just the Mandarin Chinese. So Yaya means uncle in my dialect. So the uncle means wisdom. So you have enough wisdom with Nigerian agriculture, the whole transformation, as well as CFS. So we have learned a lot from various interactions with you. Again, we're also supporting the CFS on various issues, the voluntary land guidelines, the responsible investment guidelines. So IFPRI have been providing technical support in all these initiatives. On Nigeria, as you know, we have a very strong team on the ground in supporting the ministry, in supporting Akin Adesina in transforming its agriculture sector. So the development strategy and the governance division has worked there for some time. So in fact, right after Akin Adesina took over, he called us, he called IFPRI in August, asked for information, analysis, data we have done for the last 4 or 5 years. So some of the 14 other reform initiatives, the value chains, processing zones, came from some of our research. At least, you know, our research provided inputs into that. Now I have 3 points. One is the role of small holders in the transformation of the agriculture sector. 10 years ago, I made a speech in the International Association of Agriculture Economics in South Africa. The title was, Is Small Beautiful? I think today that question remains relevant. Is smallholders still efficient? Is still profitable? My answer is still the same as 10 years ago, so it has to be context specific. Many things have changed, the world has changed. So the smallholder has different roles, or the different size of farms have different roles. From economics point of view, the size of farm or smallholder is economically endogenous variable. So the size should be determined based on the relative productivity of agriculture sector or smallholders and a non-agriculture sector or non-smallholders. So the equilibrium point is where the marginal return equal. So otherwise, you can always move resources, including labor around, to make sure that you can always gain more. So that is economic theory. And obviously, relative productivity changes over time. Economic transformation, so agriculture transformation, is very much related to the overall economic transformation. So that's my first point. So size, the context-specific size of farm and the context-specific role of smallholders in promoting the whole transformation of agriculture. My second point is how China, Brazil, and India's experience can have implications or can be shared with Africa. It is clear that the initial investment in irrigation, in research, in rural infrastructure, in marketing played a huge role in the smallholders transformation in agriculture. Jonathan or Yaya mentioned about a 10% budget allocation to agriculture. Just for your information, Asian countries spend 10 to 15% of their national budget on agriculture just before the Green Revolution, and even during the Green Revolution. So the 10% budget allocation didn't come from the heaven. It's based on the experience in Asia, based on IPRI's analysis, why we need a 10% budget allocation. Yeah, it's ambition, it's a vision, but it also has sound base, sound analytical base. Now, obviously, the Asian economy has been transformed. Now, the question is small still beautiful? I think in many cases, they have become not beautiful anymore. So the whole transformation process has redefined the role of smallholders. And let me just give you an example of my whole village. My whole village is a very good example of the Asian agriculture transformation. In the 50s, my village were collectivized. So everybody worked together. We owned the same piece of land. It's a very large scale operation. But it didn't work. After 4 or 5 years, we had a great famine. So that's why after certain years, after the Cultural Revolution, China began to decentralize the land into each household. Very small scale, not 1 hectare. It's 0.1 hectare per household. But because of the incentives farmers have to produce more, to sell more, to benefit more, with 0.1 hectare, they could feed the whole family. They could send the children to good schools. And my father was the commune leader, so he was part of the transformation. And then urbanization came, migration. Many people moved to cities, including young people. So now if you go to a village, you feel very sad. Only 1/3 of the population, maybe even 1/4 of the population remained. Majority of them moved to the cities. Used to be 1,500 people in a village, so now it's 300, 400. But it provided opportunity for agriculture to transform. So there was a very smart investor from a neighboring commune who came to our village. He said, hey, instead of small piece of land owned by you guys, can I contract with you and I can consolidate the land into a bigger piece? The villager said, yes, fine. So my second brother took over from my father as a village leader. He coordinated the villager, said, hey, why don't we work together? We rented this land to this investor. So the investor with the consolidated land borrowed the money from local government to put the investment, particularly greenhouses, on that piece of land. And he began to produce vegetables and fruits. So farmers now don't do anything. The rent is bigger than the net income they could get from farming. So that's one source of income. Another source of income is labor. This investor needs labor to help to weed, water the vegetable in the greenhouses. The elderly people make $10 a day just by simply doing some exercise, watering the plants. So mutual benefit. So smallholders need this investment for two sources of income, and the investor needs land. So the contract is mutual. So the transformation happens not only in my village. It happens in many parts of China. It happens in Vietnam, and gradually India and many other places. So that sort of transformation goes beyond smallholder land. So the farming skill has become very large. But now the question is in Africa, can we do that in Africa? Big question. Africa needs a big, very vibrant urban sector to absorb labor, workers from agriculture sector. Without doing that, then Africa will have much faster urbanization without industrialization. So the consequence is you have lots of urban slums. So people in the city do not have jobs. They create a problem, violence. What should we do in Africa? Young people is an opportunity. Last year in 2012, IPRI published a global food policy report. There's a chapter on youth employment in agriculture authored by Karen Brooks. I saw Karen here a couple of it's still sitting there. So the young people present a great opportunity for Africa. Don't they move to cities without jobs? Provide good opportunities for them in their village. They can access to land, good land. They can access to credit. They can access to agriculture services. And with incentives, I'm very sure the farmers will be, these young farmers will be able to convert agriculture to business. So this is something we must do, not to push them to the cities, to provide opportunities for them. Now, my third point is how China, India, and Africa work with, China, India, Brazil work with Africans to bring their technologies, markets, know-how, practices to Africa. We have seen a lot of engagement already. Brazil is investing in many, how do you call that, northern countries. Five countries have investment. China is also in many countries, Nigeria, Ethiopia, I mean, the two countries we have discussed here. India is doing the same thing after the India-China summit. So there are great, great opportunities that we can work together to bring the markets. I just had a chat with Yaya about a Chinese businessman. He was very much interested in importing cassava chips from Nigeria for feed, and not necessarily just for biofuel, for feed starch. Market is there, but he's worried about scale. Said, I'm not interested in 1,000 tons. I'm interested in 10,000 tons or 1 million tons. So I'm interested in scale. Because of scale, they can make a good profit. They can, with investment, to bring cassava chips to big market in Asia. Sesame is another one. Chickpeas, another one. India is very much interested. So market from Asia will be critical. Then technology. I was in Prabhupada just about 2 weeks ago. Every time when I go there, I was motivated. So much excitement from that first-class research institution. Because of two things, their soybean yield tripled within like 10, 20 years. One is soil improvement. The vast area of Brazil has very acid soil. And the soybean can only be produced in temperate zones. But in Prabhupada did two things. One is soil improvement to solve the acid problem of soil. Second, called a tropicalization of soybean varieties. So bring the soybeans to tropical area. So by doing that, the soybean yield has been increased from 1 ton per hectare to 3 tons. Now they're talking about 5 tons in the experimental yield. So tremendous benefits, tremendous impact on the overall economy. Then obviously the Chinese technology, I just discussed it with Khalid, that the former Chinese president of former president of Chinese Academy of Agriculture Sciences, which is one of the largest agriculture institutions, research institution in the world, is coming to Ethiopia to look at the possibilities, opportunities, where the Chinese can bring the technologies to Ethiopia. And I don't know whether he exaggerated impact. He said, I was in Africa just very briefly. With my little effort, I can easily double the yield in 2 or 3 years. Well, let's see whether that work can become the truth. Now, well, obviously the IPRI is a research organization. We're committed to support the efforts in Nigeria, in Ghana, CFS, or even some of the US NET initiative, the Field of the Future. As you know, we have been working together so well. So count on us to support you, particularly in the policy area. So last point, I said many times in this room, the capacity building, the importance of capacity building. I think both of you mentioned about the capacity building, the importance of capacity building. Yes, in Africa, as I can see, the weak capacity probably is one of the biggest challenges we face today. IPRI is committed to improve food policy making capacity in Africa through various programs in Addis, Dakar, country support programs. And I really hope through our work in the next 5 to 10 years, big strategies, investment plans, policies will come from African researchers, not from IPRI, not from the World Bank. I mean, if all these policy strategies come from Africa, I think we can seize our operation just like a UATA. Thank you very much.